Dear friends, on Sunday, February 11th, Suburban Orthodox Congregation and the Institute for Jewish Continuity are hosting our annual dinner and comedy show, our most important fundraising initiative of the year. We will be taking the time to honor those who have given so much to build our kehila, and we'll be taking the time to honor those who have given so much to help build up the Institute. Our educational arm, the Institute for Jewish Continuity, has allowed literally learners from all over the globe to participate in our shiurim, to be part of the dynamic process we call Talmud Torah, to learn and to grow each and every day. But we need your help to continue on our sacred mission. We need your support to continue to spread the beautiful light of Torah literally to every corner of the globe. If you could attend the dinner, wonderful. If you could place a journal ad, fantastic. And even if you're not local and can't do either, we would urge you to please take this opportunity to help support our enterprise of holiness, our enterprise of Talmud Torah, our enterprise of Achdus. Our Kehillah brings together so many. Our Institute spreads Torah to so many. And you could partner with us in helping us to continue this beautiful and holy dynamic. Visit www.suburbanorthodox.org and you'll see the banner there for the Elan Gold for the 60th anniversary dinner and show. Make your reservation, place your journal ad, and make your contribution. I thank you in advance for partnering with us. I thank you in advance for your commitment to helping us continue our holy work, and I hope that you will be privileged to grow and to learn together for many years to come.
All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So we find ourselves this week in Parshas Yisro. And in Parshas Yisro, of course, the main part, I should say, the center stage event of Parshas Yisro is Sinaitic revelation, is Kabbalah Satorah. The Ribbono Shel Olam gives us the Torah. And again, of course, the giving of the Torah was not just simply a list of do's and don'ts, but the giving of the Torah itself is what solidifies our national identity. The Torah represents our charter. The Torah represents our relationship contract with the Ribbono Shel Olam. And all of that unfolds in the midst of this week's parasha. But the truth is, before we get to the drama of Sinaitic revelation, the Torah tells us about something much more nuanced. The truth is, if you remember 3 years ago, we touched on this. You remember, of course, 3 years ago we touched on this. So remember again, at the beginning of the parasha, something much more dramatic yet nuanced occurs, which is the reunification of Moshe together with his wife and his children. Up until this point in time, Moshe Rabbeinu has been without Tzipora and without his sons. Because remember again, as Rashi tells us, as Moshe Rabbeinu is heading back down into Mitzrayim, remember again, the last episode we saw with Moshe and his family was which episode?
Going back to Egypt.
Good, going back to Egypt. But what happened? By the Malon. Remember again, by the inn, Moshe Rabbeinu was attacked by this thing, by this malach, by this serpent who threatens to kill him. Tzipporah circumcises their youngest son. That's the last we hear of Tzipporah and the boy. Why? Because Tzipporah and her sons go back to Midian. As Moshe Rabbeinu is making his way down to Mitzrayim, Aaron meets them, and Aaron says, Moshe, we're trying to take the Jews out of Egypt. Why are you bringing more people into Egypt? So as such, again, Moshe Rabbeinu sends back Tzipporah and the boys back to Midian, and that's where they have been throughout this entire story. In the beginning of this week's parasha, as Yisro comes to join Moshe Rabbeinu, he also brings Tzipporah, and he also brings the boys. And in the midst of this, Yisro observes what's happening in the ranks of Klal Yisrael. Take a look at number one. Vayimi Macharas, and it was the next day. Vayeshev Moshe Lishpot Es Ha'am. Moshe Rabbeinu sits down to judge the people. Remember again, Moshe Rabbeinu has multiple identities. Moshe Rabbeinu is the Navi, he is the prophet. Moshe Rabbeinu is the Melech, he's the king. And Moshe Rabbeinu is the Dayon, he is the judge. So Yisro comes, beautiful, the family hugs, everybody's happy to see each other. Next day it's business as usual. And what does Moshe Rabbeinu do? He sits down to adjudicate the cases, the difficulties, the challenges of the Jewish people. Vayamo ta'ama Moshe, minapokir ad ha'erev. And what does Yisro see? Moshe Rabbeinu literally is sitting from morning until night, adjudicating the legal cases of Klal Yisrael. Vayar chosin Moshe es kol asher hu oseh la'am. Vayomer ma hadavar hazeh asher ata oseh la'am. Madua ata yoshev levadecha v'chol ha'am nitzav alecha min ha'boker ad ha'erev. And Yisro says to Moshe Rabbeinu, what are you doing? What are you doing? What is this thing that you are doing? You literally sit in judgment of the people from morning until evening. You're all alone. You have no help. And it's an overwhelming situation. Vayomer Moshe Lechosno. Moshe Benu says to his father-in-law, Ki yavo elai ha'am lidrosh alokim. I don't know. I mean, this is what happens. People have problems. People have issues. People have questions. They come to me to seek out the word and the wisdom of God. Ki Elohim davar ba'ilai v'shafatati ben isha ben ra'iyu. I'm in number one, Pasuk Tezayin, verse 16. When people have disagreements, they come to me. I adjudicate between one man and his fellow. V'hodati eschukai eschukei alokim v'es torasai. And I tell the people, Torah, excuse me. And I tell the people the word of God. I tell the people the ruling. I tell the people the Torah. Vayomer Moshe, Chosei Moshe Elav, Lo Tov HaDavar She'ata Osa. So spoken like a true father-in-law. What does Yisro say to his son-in-law? What you're doing is not good. What you're doing is not good. So of course, all kidding aside, Yisro is a concerned and loving father-in-law. He says, Moshe, not going to work. This Lo Tov HaDavar She'ata Osa. What you are doing is not good. Why not? Navol Tibol Gam Ata Gama Amazeh Asher Imach. Literally translated, because you will surely wear yourself out, both you and these people who are with you, for the matter is too heavy for you. You can't do it alone. Moshe, you're shouldering the burden of the entire Jewish people by yourself. You're adjudicating their cases from morning until evening. You're solving their problems all day, all hours of the day. It's too much. You can't handle it alone. Ato. Shmabakoli, Iyatzcha, Yisro says, but listen, I'm not just here to tell you the problem, I'm here to help you with the solution. What's the solution? And Yisro, of course, goes on to explain or to describe to Moshe a very simple solution. Create a judicial system. Create a judicial system. Create different levels of a judiciary, larger judges who preside over larger numbers, smaller numbers. Create an entire legal system, Moshe Rabbeinu. This way, you do not have to deal with all of this on your own. This way, you have other people to help you shoulder the load. You have other people to help you with your sanctified work. Okay? An incredible exchange. Incredible exchange. But it leaves us ultimately again with one simple question, which is, or one not so simple question, which is, so who's going to help him? Okay, who do you have to identify the right people? But what else? Even simpler.
Is he
still
getting involved?
Oh, so, okay. So why, right? Why is the shver, right? Why is the father-in-law involving himself? Good. The truth is, it's a simple one because literally he loves his son-in-law. And the truth is, as much as he loves his son-in-law, you know who else he loves? He loves his daughter. He loves his daughter who happens to be the wife of his son-in-law, and he sees already now what her quality of life is going to be. The husband is out working from morning until night, burdened with the problems of Klal Yisrael. There's not going to be any kind of, and by the way, Yisrael was spot on with that because that didn't change. Even with the whole judicial system, Moshe Rabbeinu's primary allegiance and attention was to the Klal, not to his own family. That's a deeper discussion of itself. But there's a simpler question. Simple question is, Yisro was smarter than Moshe Rabbeinu? I don't understand. What Yisro is suggesting over here is not rocket science. Moshe Rabbeinu, at the end of the day, is trying to shoulder the entire load of the people by himself. Moshe Rabbeinu, can you imagine this, by the way? We know that there are 600,000 men between the ages of 20 and 60, which means if we do just basic math, there's over 3.5 million people. Moshe Rabbeinu, you're the only judge for 3.5 million people? You're the only man who's going to handle all of the issues? You're the address to adjudicate every dispute? So Yisro says, one man can't do it alone. Shkayach. Why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu think of this? Why does this take Yisro to bring this up? Why is this Yisro's idea? Like he discovered something dramatic. It's a simple, straightforward, the same way, by the way, the same way that Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't only leader. Remember again, from the beginning, there is a two-headed leadership model of the Jewish people. The truth is, it's really a three-headed model. It's really Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, because there's a recognition that one person can't do it by himself. So already from the beginning, there was an understanding that one person can't lead. You need help. You need a framework. So why is this Yisro's incredible observation, incredible idea, and why didn't Moshe implement this concept even before Yisro ever brought it up. So I want to share with you a couple of different approaches to this question, each of which yields a different understanding in the psukim. So take a look at number two. So this is a beautiful idea by Rav Tzvi Yehuda HaKohen Cook. So Rav Tzvi Yehuda, who's the son of Avram Yitzchak HaKohen, writes the following, and he says something so beautiful. He says, "Vizeh," skip down a little, skip, I apologize, I didn't number the paragraphs, but in the left-hand paragraph, "Hari Yisro, Yesh Chachma Ma'anyenes." I'm in four lines in the left-hand paragraph, right-hand paragraph, sorry, number two. "Umosha ben Akil Menu Divrei Yisodi, Davar Yisodi, V'chashuv HaShayach La'adrochas HaChaim Shaklal Yisro." So again, Yisro has this Chachma, set up a judicial system, and Moshe Rabbeinu says, "Shkoyach, excellent idea. You know what? I'm going to take it. I'm going to implement it." Yisro Tzodek Ma'od Bo'omro Dvarim Pshutim U'Nechonim Novel Tibol. Yisro comes with a very simple claim, not a claim against Moshe Rabbeinu, but a claim with Moshe Rabbeinu, saying novel tibol. Novel tibol means you're going to wear yourself out. You're going to wear yourself out. And as such, again, this is an unsustainable model. Asks Rav Tzvi Yehuda something amazing. Eich Moshe Rabbeinu lo hirgish me'atzmo es achidish hazeh shel Yisro. So Rav Tzvi asks a simple question. Why didn't Moshe understand this on his own? This is a question we were asking before. Why is it that Yisro has this chiddush and Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have this chiddush? Kivyochol, look where you see who the writes. Hagoy hazeh yoser chacha me'am Yisrael. He'll excuse me, but this Gentile, now he's a convert, but this Gentile, he didn't convert yet, he's converting now, but this Gentile ultimately, again, is smarter than Moshe. It's Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe speaks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu upon him, upon him. So Yisro comes up with a chachma that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know beforehand. So look what Rav Tzvi Yehuda says, something so beautifully amazing. He says, "Ela shesgulas Yisrael ubichiraso eina teluya b'malos yachalihios mishu yoser chacham eitanu ubichol zos banu bachar ribano shalolam." So Rav Tzvi Yehuda says something so beautiful. He says, you know, these are the parshios in which our identity as the Am HaNivchar, as the chosen people, is solidified. See, ever wonder, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu choose us? Why are we chosen? So it's easy to think that we're chosen because we're smarter, because we're this, we're that. So it comes under two then, he says the following. What this episode shows us is that Ribbono Shel Olam didn't choose us because we're smarter. What's the proof to that? What's the proof to that? The proof to that is Yisro. Right? The proof to that is Yisro. Yisro came up with an idea that the great Moshe Rabbeinu did not. It could be that there are people who are smarter than Am Yisro. It could be that there are people who are smarter than the Jews. I know it's hard for us to hear such a thing like this. But it could be that there are smarter people in the world than we are. The reason we were chosen ultimately, again, is not necessarily because we've cornered the market on intellect and we've cornered the market on smarts. So why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu choose us? Ultimately, again, he says, at the end of the day, the reason HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose us as a nation has nothing to do with character traits, qualities, intellect, or otherwise. The reason HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose us is for one simple reason. Because He chose us. Because at the end of the day, there's some type of what He calls, see who the calls elsewhere, a skula pnimit. There's something different about Klal Yisrael. There's some type of different internal spiritual marker that often cannot be measured with any of the metrics that we normally measure people. We're not better than anyone. By the way, we're not necessarily even holier than anyone, meaning there are many, many, many holy people throughout the world who might be holier than many of the Jews. We're not smarter than everyone. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't choose us because of something unique, some unique quality or trait we possess. HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose us because there's something unique in who we are. Now you'll say to yourself, Sunu, what is it? So herein lies the great mystery of Klal Yisrael. That sometimes that thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees in us, that thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu singled out within us, very often is hard to quantify, very often it's hard to describe, and very often is hard to really go ahead and identify. But we know that it's there. And we know that it's there because HaKadosh Baruch Hu went ahead and singled us out as His chosen nation, as His Goy Kadosh, as His Mamleches Kohanim. But ultimately, again, Rav Tzvi Yehuda says, lest you think that it's because of our intellect, it's not. V'harayah, the proof, Yisro comes up with an idea that Moshe Rabbeinu did not. But we still have to take this a little bit further. Because the truth is, this is a beautiful idea, but still, we're not talking about a complex idea. We're not talking about something, you know, sometimes a person comes up with an idea and you say to yourself, you know what? I would have never thought of that. Right? Sometimes you have a problem, someone comes up with a solution, and it's so ingenious. It's so ingenious. I would have never thought about that. That's not this case. That's not this situation. Moshe Rabbeinu is a single judge for 3.5 million people. Of course, it's an unsustainable model. And of course, the only way to deal with it is to set up multiple branches of a Judaic judiciary. So why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu do it? And this is the fundamental question. It's not, let's presuppose, so Rav Tzvi Yehuda takes a different approach. Rav Tzvi Yehuda's approach is, Moshe Rabbeinu just never thought of it. And what's the take-home message? The take-home message was, Yisrael was smarter than Moshe. Yes, at least in this area, Yisrael was smarter than Moshe. And what's the message to us? That what makes us unique is not our intellect. What makes us unique is some type of internal quality that often we can't identify, the world can't identify, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is able to identify. But putting Rav Tzvi Yehuda on the side, let's just, even if you want to say that Moshe is not smarter than Yisrael, if you want to say that, we have to presuppose that Moshe Rabbeinu is at least as smart as Yisro. So again, why can't he figure this out? Why didn't he come up with this idea? So take a look at number 3. So Rav Levi Yitzchak Abadichev says as follows. He says, Madua, and I know sometimes, you know, when you hear things like Yisro was smarter than Moshe Rabbeinu. So a person sometimes takes that as like a negative patch on Moshe. Just understand, Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't chosen because of his intellect. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't chosen because he was the smartest guy in his class. Moshe Rabbeinu was chosen because he possessed certain unique spiritual qualities. So the notion that there's someone who possesses greater intellectual prowess than Moshe Rabbeinu in no way diminishes the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. But again, leaving Rav Tzvi Yehuda on the side, why didn't Moshe implement this himself? So take a look at number 3. So 3, 4, and 5 are going to be a unit. Rav Levi Yitzchak has a beautiful insight. Now, he's not addressing this particular question, but through his insight, we can answer this question. So Rav Levi Yitzchak says, the Rebbe says that the truth is, the flow of the psukim seems to be imprecise. Why? First, Yisro says to Moshe, why does the entire nation nitzav alecha? Why are they like, nitzav alecha literally means like on top of you or hovering on you. And then it says, Moshe, this is too much for you to handle. Pasach b'davar ach echad, v'siyem b'davar acher. Meaning Yisro begins by saying, why is the entire people nitzav alecha surrounding you? And then he ends off by saying, it's too much for you. So what the Rebbe says, ach yesh lomar ha-perish, tehineh ha-adam tzarech lios holeich mimadrega lemadrega. You know, the goal of life. What's the metric of success in Judaism? How do you know if you're living a successful life? It's really not perfection, because perfection is not attainable for us. The hallmark of a successful life is a life of growth. If I can go ahead and demonstrate that today was better than yesterday, that I did more today than I did the day before, that's a successful day. That's the mark of Judaic success. That's why the tzaddik is always called a holich. The tzaddik is someone who is always moving, always growing, always doing. Holich mimadrega lemadrega, v'lo lios nitzav al ma'amad b'china achos. The greatest tragedy in life is stagnation. That is the greatest tragedy. People often think that sin is the greatest tragedy. Sin is not the greatest tragedy. Why? Because sin is part of the fabric of the human condition. We all sin, and we will all sin, and we will all continue to sin. Hopefully we will sin less frequently. Hopefully we won't commit the same averos over and over. But there's no person here, there's no person in Klal, there's no person in the world who's going to say, I'm never going to sin again. I might not repeat this negative, but we make mistakes. The greatest tragedy of the human condition is not sin, but it's stagnation. The goal is to move mi madrega la madrega and not to be nitzav al ma'amad b'china achos. Not to stand in place. Watch this. V'hinei kishetzadik medabrim anoshem p'chusim. Me'erech shalo. As he mebalbalim oso. So this is amazing. Sometimes when the tzaddik spends too much time with people who are of a lesser spiritual caliber, so what happens? What happens? They bring him down. Mebalbalim also literally means they mix him up. And by the way, this is not just true with tzaddikim. In general, when we spend too much time with the wrong kind of people. I mean, let me take a step back. People often think, we like to think, that we are impervious to the influences around us. So I could spend as much time as I want with these, with certain people, and even though I know they're doing the wrong thing, they're saying the wrong thing, they're acting the wrong way, living the wrong way, it's not going to affect me because I'm strong in who I am. That is unequivocally false. At the end of the day, we are impacted by everything that goes on around us. See, even the tzaddik, as strong as he is, if he spends a lot of time with people who are spiritually deficient, he mebalbalim also. They mix up the tzaddik. What does it mean they mix up the tzaddik? That keeping company with the wrong kind of people erodes the sanctity, the holiness, and the kedusha of the tzaddik. What happens? He goes, ach, mishu tzaddik gadol, but someone who is truly great, yachol lahalos osam ayedi hadibor, ach shu avod gedola. See, a regular tzaddik can be brought down by those who are spiritually deficient, but a tzaddik gadol, not a great tzaddik, not only is he not brought down by those who are deficient, but what? He's actually able to lift up those around him. He is able not only to be compromised, but he's able to positively influence. And interestingly enough, by the way, how is he able to positively influence? Through his dibur, through his speech. The other Rebbe discusses this a lot, the power of a kind word, the power of a compliment. Right? The tzaddik gadol doesn't go ahead and get people to become great by telling them, you know, if you don't keep Shabbos, you're going to Gehenna. I just want to let you know, I love you. I love you. I don't want you to go to Gehenna. Right? So therefore, you should really do this. That does not work. It backfires. Nobody wants to go to Gehenna. Nobody wants to hear about Gehenna. Nobody wants to be totally going to go to Gehenna. What the tzaddik does is, the tzaddik is ma'ala people through a kind word, through a compliment, through divrei Torah, through positive reinforcement about their positive and their good traits. That's what the tzaddik does. The tzaddik gadol is able to go ahead and lift people up, and not only is he not brought down, but he lifts them up. Watch this. So he says, "Lazeh shalom mitchila mazeh shekala am nitzav alecha sheim bechinas nitzavim b'ma'amad echad." So listen to this. The Rebbe says something amazing. Yisro's claim to Moshe was something dramatically different. Yisro's claim to Moshe was, Moshe, you are such a great man, and you're spending your days in the company of ordinary and sometimes base people. So do you understand, my dear son-in-law, what that is going to do to you over the course of time? You are the great Moshe Rabbeinu. You know, there's a whole machlokis, there's a whole dispute chronologically about when Yisro joins, when does the beginning of Parshas Yisro, Yisro's joining Klal Yisro, when does it happen? Does it happen immediately after Yamsuf, after Amalek, after Kabbalah Satorah? Whatever it is, it doesn't make a difference. One thing that Yisro knows is his son-in-law Moshe is the greatest man of the generation. Whether he knows that his son-in-law is going to become the greatest man of all time is a different discussion. But what he says is, what are you doing? What are you doing? You're great. You're righteous. You're holy. And you're spending your days in the midst of the commoners. You're spending your days in the midst of their squabbles, in the midst of their machlokes, in the midst of their problems, in the midst of their pettiness. If you go ahead and you surround yourself with these influences each and every day, it's going to bring you down. You're not going to be Moshe Rabbeinu anymore. It's going to ebb away at your holiness. It's going to ebb away at your spirituality. That's what Yisro was saying to Moshe. What does Moshe respond? Last two lines in number three. As Heshiv la Moshe, Heim Boim Eilai Letaknam. Va'ani ma'ala osam bedibor. As amar lo imkein kaviat. So what happens? So Moshe says, my dear father, you don't understand. They don't bring me down. I love them. I bring them up. When I show them love, when I show them that I care about their little issues, right? Who could only imagine the stuff that came before Moshe Rabbeinu, right? The squabbles and the fights and the pettiness and the machlokis. I can imagine Moshe Rabbeinu must have had days where he must have said to himself, really? Really? This is what I have to do. He probably didn't because he was Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? But I can imagine, this is what I have to deal with? This is the guys I split the sea. I didn't do it, but I'm the right-hand man of God. I did all this stuff, and I have to worry between Reuven and Shimon squabbling over a sheep. This is what I'm dealing with? But Moshe Rabbeinu understood that he loved them. He cared about them. He wanted a closeness to them. You see, what Moshe Rabbeinu was telling Yisro is, Yisro, you come from a different world where religious leaders are to remain aloof, where religious leaders are supposed to be on top and the flock is below. That's not the way we do things in Klal Yisrael, says Moshe Rabbeinu. These are my people. This is my flock. And the same way that the shepherd doesn't manage the flock from the ivory tower, but the shepherd has to be there on the pasture with the sheep. These are my sheep. These are my children. This is my nation. And so I have to be in their midst. Ah, you think that me being literally in the midst of all this mundanity and silliness and pettiness is going to bring me down? Just the opposite. My job through my relationship with them is to bring them up. And herein lies the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. I'll show you one more thing, then we'll tie it back. If you take a look at number 4, along the same theme, Vayetse Moshe Likras Chosno. This is going back to the beginning of the parasha. Moshe Rabbeinu goes out to greet Yisro. Vayishtachu, Vayishaklo. He bowed to him, he kissed him. Vayishalu Ish L'Re'ehu L'Shalom. And literally again, Ish L'Re'ehu, one man to another. This is about Moshe and Yisro. Ish L'Re'ehu, they asked one another how they're doing. Vayavo, they came into the tent. Look at number 5. Rabbi Nachman writes in the Kutei Halachas, he says something amazing. Vayishalu Ish L'Re'ehu L'Shalom. Hanemar B'Moshe V'Yisro. So listen to this. Ask Rabbi Nachman, I don't understand. How do you say about Moshe and Yisro? Vayishak ish, vayishalu ish l're'ehu. Ish l're'ehu means what? Equality. Ish l're'ehu means equality. Two people of equals. Moshe and Yisro are ish l're'ehu. Moshe Rabbeinu is Moshe Rabbeinu. Yisro is a great man, but he's not Moshe Rabbeinu's contemporary. He's not Moshe Rabbeinu's peer. He's not on the same level as Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu again received the Torah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Yisro was great. Nizkai makam rachok v'tayim ma'od ki lo niach avodazor shlo avde. Yisro worshipped every single avodazor. Beprat pe'ish shebala Moshe shadayin lo niskayir rak shiratzel niskayir. And at this point, when Yisro shows up in the beginning of Parshas Yisro, he wants to convert, but he hasn't yet converted. So how can you call Yisro the Re'ehu, the fellow of Moshe Rabbeinu, the left-hand column number 5? Vafa Pikein, Korim Ish Re'ehu, Ki Kach Darko Shalat Tzadik HaGavoa Ma'od, Shubichinas Moshe. Because says Rabbi Nachman, just like Rabbi Yitzchok said, you want to know what the mark of a real tzaddik is? The mark of the tzaddik gadol, the mark of the tzaddik gadol of a Moshe Rabbeinu, Shehu Morid Es Atzmo. The tzaddik gadol, the great righteous man, does not live in an ivory tower. He is not aloof. He is not detached. He is not, I am up here and the flock is down here. Rather, shu morid es atzmo, umekarev es atzmo kol kach l'mi sheyesh lo eizer ratzon l'iskarev es ela emes, umekarev es atzmo elav kol kach kilu haya chaveiro mamish. Says Rabbi Nachman, Tzaddik Gadol has one desire. The Tzaddik Gadol has a desire to connect with people. To connect with people, to forge relationships with people, because the Tzaddik Gadol understands that I can lift you up. The Tzaddik Gadol understands that I could lift people up. The Tzaddik Gadol understands that he has the power. Just through his words, just through his actions, just through his friendship, through his empathy, through his compassion, he has the ability to lift people up. So when Moshe sees Yisro, is Moshe greater than Yisro? Of course he's greater than Yisro. But that's not how he relates. What he sees is someone who wants to come closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What he sees from someone is someone who is on a journey to grow. And Moshe says, if you want to grow, I'm going to come to you and help you in that process. I will come down to you so that we could go up together. If we bring this all together, Rabbi Yitzchak saying, did Moshe Rabbeinu know the idea of setting up a judicial system? Did he know this idea? Of course he knew this idea. That's not rocket science. So why didn't he do it? Because Moshe Rabbeinu at the end of the day felt, it is my sacred duty to relate and to connect to each of them individually. This is not something I can outsource, because this is not simply just about adjudicating their legal disputes. This is not simply about solving machlokes. This is about getting down in the trenches with the people and lifting them back up with me. That cannot be accomplished by outsourcing to judges. That cannot be accomplished ultimately, again, through creating a judicial framework. Moshe Rabbeinu had this idea. I guarantee you, after every single long day, Moshe Rabbeinu had this idea. But then he also realized that as the tzaddik gadol, as the great righteous man of the Jewish people, it was not his job to lead from on top, but it was his job to lead from within the trenches. The power of the tzaddik to connect even with the simplest of individuals and ultimately, again, raise them up through his dibur, through his speech, through his Torah, through his actions, and through his connection. Moshe Rabbeinu had the same idea as Yisro, but at the end of the day, actively chose not to implement it. So what changes in this week's parasha? What changes here? What changes here?
He accepts it.
He accepts this simple idea that Yisro tells him, not going to work. It's... what you want to do is beautiful and it's very noble, but it's not going to work. Novel Tibo, you can't physically do it. You might be Moshe Rabbeinu, but you're still a human being. You might be Moshe Rabbeinu, but you're still immortal. And as such, again, even if you want to connect with every single one of them, Baruch Hashem, there's too many. So an incredible, incredible progression that takes place of Moshe Rabbeinu wanting to accomplish something so beautiful, so noble, so holy, with the most beautiful of intentions, and his very well-meaning, loving, and supportive father-in-law saying, it's not going to work. And sometimes in your heart, there's something, you want to do something very badly. And you do it, and you start it, and you know that it's not going to work. But what? You keep going. And then when someone else who's kind of outside this situation tells you, who you know loves you, who you know cares about you, who knows, you know, has your best interest, saying, by the way, you know it's not going to work, right? You know it's not going to work. It's almost sometimes you need that license to let go. Yisro was Moshe Rabbeinu's license to let go. I love this people so much. I love this nation so much. And all I want to do is be with them, even in the pettiest of moments. Because I, as the tzaddik gadol, Moshe Rabbeinu says, has the ability to lift them up. And Yisro says, my beloved son-in-law, it's beautiful. It's admirable. It's noble. But it's not going to work. You can't do it. You can't do it. The people can't do it. It's not shaykh. And as such, when Moshe Rabbeinu hears what he already knew in his heart, probably for a large amount of time preceding this exchange, but when his father-in-law says it, when someone outside of him comes and says it, ultimately, again, he accepts it. But to take this one step further, take a look at number 6. The Lubavitcher Rebbe in his Likutei Sichos says something quite beautiful here. He says, he asked the question again, Tamo HaMefarshim. The Mefarshim asked the basic question, which is,
Why is this Yisro's idea? Why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu have this idea even before Yisro came along? And the Rebbe gives a beautiful answer. Paragraph base. He says, "In the farish asa'inyan kipshuto, shelo haya bekocho shel Moshe, lishpot levado es am Yisro." So Baruch Rebbe says, it can't be true that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't possess the power to do this. Moshe Rabbeinu had the koach. If Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to, he could have gone ahead and what? He could have been the lone, solitary judge of the Jewish people. Ki b'mchinoso shel Moshe, V'haya b'kach koshi. V'hu lohaya zakok l'siyua kolshu. Adirabba. Me'achar she'moshu she'ki b'alas atarim b'ya gvura. Ra'oi haya she'yilameit es b'nei Yisrael v'yishpot osam ba'atzmo. Kedei she'afhei mi'kabu as atarim b'darga na'alis kamoso. And here the Rebbe says something amazing. The truth is, now the Rebbe is disagreeing a little bit, excuse me, with Rabbi Levi Yitzchak and with Rabbi Nachman, and saying, Moshe could have done it. If Moshe didn't want to continue down this path of being the lone solitary judge, he could have done so. He could have done so. In fact, one could even make the cogent argument that it is fitting for Moshe to be the one and only Dayan of Klal Yisrael. Why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu was going to receive the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who gave the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu is the vehicle of the dissemination of Torah between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. As such, again, it would have been appropriate for Moshe Rabbeinu ultimately to be the judge. It would have been appropriate. So what happens? So watch this. He goes on, he says, paragraph Gimel. B'lashon HaChasidus, Moshe kibel as HaTorah me'HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'dargas re'iya. V'lachin, Ratza shegam bnei Yisrael yekablu b'meno as HaTorah b'dargazu. Shunalis yoser midargas shmiya. So the Rebbe here says something absolutely amazing. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah through what's called re'iya, through sight. Moshe Rabbeinu saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe Rabbeinu experienced the revelation with his sight. Klal Yisrael experienced it through shmiya, through hearing, right? Because remember again, they hear the first two commandments, then they don't want anymore, and Moshe Rabbeinu conveys the rest of them ultimately again through the mechanism of shmiya, through the mechanism of listening. He goes on, V'lachin, Ratzah shegam b'nei Yisrael yikablu b'menah satorah b'dar gazu, shina lis yoser midar gashmiya. So what happens? Why does Moshe Rabbeinu judge the people on his own? Because Moshe Rabbeinu, who received the Torah in this heightened level of re'iya, of seeing, would be able to give over the Torah to the general populace in this heightened level of seeing as well. But what happens? Paragraph Dalet. Dvarav shal Yisro lo es yachsu eifo liyichalosu shal Moshe elo liyichalosam shal b'nei Yisro l'shmoa ulekabel es mishpat ha-Torah mipiv shal Moshe b'nu atzmo. Yisrotan, let me just read one more line. Yisrotan, shekasher anoshim ba'im lamo l'mishpat hanogel iskeim ha'ishim, heim nimtzom bedaga ruchonis rechoka betachlis madrigas al shamoshe, ve'ein ze bekocham l'kabel v'limo des mishpat ha'torah bedargas al shamoshe atzmo. So listen to this. The Rebbe says something amazing that's happening over here. There's a two-part machlokis that's occurring. Number one, the dispute Moshe and Yisrael is as follows. Moshe says, my dear father-in-law, I am the judge of Klal Yisrael. I have to convey to them the Torah. Why? Because I received the Torah through what's called re'iya, through sight, which is a heightened level of revelation. They received the Torah through shmiya, through hearing, which is a lower level of revelation. If I give them over the Torah, I could convey to them elements of that heightened experience. Yisro says to Moshe, Moshe, I hate to burst your bubble. They're not interested in that. All they want to know is who is right and who is wrong. All they want to know is Reuven and Shimon are fighting over an ox. Who does it belong to? They do not need your elevated experience of re'iya. All they want at the end of the day is the adjudication of their disputes. All they want at the end of the day is for you to tell them who is right and who is wrong. But the Rebbe goes on and he explains, we'll say this outside. He says something absolutely amazing. He says, you understand what's happening over here? Moshe Rabbeinu knows that he can set up a judicial framework. But Moshe Rabbeinu instead says something else. He says, my father-in-law, I received the Torah through this heightened level called re'iya. Experience, I see it. And therefore, I could give not only the people Torah, I could give them perfect Torah. I could give them the Torah. Remember again, the Ribono Shel Olam wanted to give Klal Yisrael the Torah in the same way that he gave it to Moshe. He wanted to also give it to us through Re'iya. Klal Yisrael said, no thank you, Moshe, we had enough. You go get the Torah and come and give it to us. Moshe Rabbeinu says, now that I am the judge, I can give it over to them in this perfect fashion of Re'iya. Moshe Rabbeinu wanted it to be perfect. Moshe Rabbeinu wanted the transmission of Torah to be perfect. And what does Yisro say? What does Yisro say? To borrow from the French writer Voltaire, Yisro said it before Voltaire, the perfect is the enemy of the good. That Yisro says to Moshe, if you're aiming for a system of perfection, it's not going to work. What does Yisro say to Moshe? You want perfect? Do you know what happens if you aim for perfect? Gam navol tibol, gam ato, gam ha'am. You know what's going to happen if you aim for perfection? You're going to wear yourself out. I know you're Moshe. I know you were up on the mountain for 40 days, 40 nights, really 120 days, 120 nights, with no food, no drink, that you are more malach a man. I got it. But at the end of the day, you're still a man. At the end of the day, you're still a human being. At the end of the day, even you have a certain threshold that you can't go past. Even you have a limit to what you can do and to the extent of your reach. If you do this, you will burn yourself out. If you do this, you will ruin yourself. And even if somehow you manage to keep it together, even if you're okay, gama'am, what about the people? How is one? It's very nice. You want to give them the perfect Torah experience of Re'iyah. It's beautiful that you want to give them the perfect revelation that you had. You know what? If they have to wait 4 hours, right? 4 hours in order for you to hear their case. I want to tell you something. Re'iyah Shmiyah, they don't care. They're going to get upset at you. They're going to become disenfranchised. And who knows what that could lead to. The machlokis between Moshe and Yisro that's unfolding over here is, do we aim for perfection or not? Moshe Rabbeinu says, yes, of course we aim for perfection. And Yisro says, of course, we don't aim for perfection. We aim for good. We aim for good. Because if you go for perfection, if you wait for perfection, novel t-ball, you wear yourself out, you wear those around you out, and ultimately you end up accomplishing very little. Herein lies the fundamental dispute between Moshe and his father-in-law. Do we aim for perfection or do we aim for good? Moshe aims for perfection, Yisro aims for good. Who's right? Who's right? Yisro's right. At the end of the day, and by the way, Yisro's right because even Moshe Rabbeinu yields to this. Even Moshe Rabbeinu says, you know what? You're right. You're right. I tried to make it perfect. I tried to make it perfect. But I realized that perfection is the truth is, it's really an unachievable state. And even if somehow you achieve it for a little bit of time, it's an unsustainable state. Even if I had a couple of weeks of perfection, Moshe Rabbeinu says, it is unsustainable. Because Naval Tibo, you can't sustain perfection. Something's going to give. Something's going to go. Something ultimately, again, will explode or implode. Perfection is unsustainable. This is the machlokis that's unfolding. And this is the message of the parsha. When faced with a choice between perfection and good, always go with good. Now, I know that sounds like a strange message, but it's an incredible message in life because sometimes we create an expectation for perfection. And when that expectation does not materialize, people are hurt, people are crushed, and people are overwhelmed. This happens within the realm of Shalom Bayis. This happens in the realm of marriage, happens in the realm of our relationships. Sometimes, again, one spouse expects perfection from the other. Everyone's a great spouse, everyone's a great husband, a great wife. No one could meet the expectation of perfection. No one could achieve that. And even if you manage to achieve it, maybe now like everything's in alignment. You've got the blue moon, the super moon, the eclipse. Maybe if everything's in alignment, maybe even if you could achieve a few moments of perfection, it's not sustainable. With our children. With our children, again, sometimes we have this idyllic image of the children we want to raise and what we want them to be like. And we say, I don't need you to be perfect. But deep down, what we're really saying is, I really need you to be perfect. I really need you to be perfect. I can't say it because it sounds too demanding. It's this, but I really need you to be perfect. And then when our kids are not perfect, not because they're bad, not because they're troubled, not because they have an issue, not because they have a diagnosis, but because they're human beings, we're crushed, we're upset, we feel defeated, we feel like failures, when at the end of the day, our sights were set on all the wrong things. Moshe Rabbeinu is perhaps the one and only human being who could deliver on perfection. Moshe Rabbeinu was perhaps the one and only human being who could reach the level of perfection. But even Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't sustain perfection for those around him. Yisro comes along and says, Moshe, I have something better to offer you than perfection. It's called good. And one last application of this, that sometimes in life we're faced with incredible opportunities. But you know what happens? We say to ourselves, you know, this is a great opportunity, but it's not perfect. But it's not perfect. I'd really like to take advantage of this opportunity, but if it was only like this, 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 and this, if it was the perfect opportunity, then I would do it. So many times you have opportunities to grow. Sometimes you have opportunities to accomplish. But you're right, the opportunity is not perfect. And so many people spend their lives waiting for the perfect opportunity, like it's going to show up, snuggle up at your feet, bring you your slippers and the paper, and say, hi, I'm perfect opportunity. Please take me. Please embrace me. Please go ahead and act. It doesn't happen that way. Don't wait for perfect opportunities in life for growth, because there are no perfect opportunities. Seize the good ones, because good is great. Because good is the new perfect. Because good, ultimately, again, is something that we can achieve and something we can sustain. Moshe Rabbeinu might be capable of reaching the level of perfection and maybe even sustaining that perfection for a little while. But for the rest of us, don't aim for perfection. Don't look for perfection. Look for good. Look for beautiful. Look for greatness, whether it's in ourselves, whether it's in our relationships, and whether it's in our avodas Hashem. And if we find that good and we build on it, then not only do we accomplish good and even great things, but that goodness and that greatness is sustainable in the days, the weeks, the months, and the years ahead. All right, we'll stop over here.
He says kitov, but we also say teres Hashem tamimo. That's in the perfect stage.